Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I hope you guys are all doing well. It is I welcoming you. It is I, the icon himself, the leader of the F4L, and again, the icon of all entertainment. I am Sean Jazz Stevens, and happy Friday, everyone. And it is Friday, believe it or not. So here I am, and here you guys are. It is Friday night, so let's kick things off right. So we should have a pretty decent show tonight. We're going to kind of cram in a couple things here. We're going to do a little bit of a two-parter here. For one thing, I believe we have a friend of ours who has been on the show prior, who may be stopping by. I haven't reconfirmed with him to make sure if that is a thing, but I believe that is the case, which, you know, hopefully can join us. That, of course, is local performing artist McNeese, I believe it is. And hopefully can join us. If not, we will make do like we always do. In the meantime, I am here for you guys, as always. So first, I wanted to address a few things. Those people who thought I was going to be doing a show yesterday, you are correct. I was going to be doing a show yesterday. However, for those of you guys who don't know, I do have a very, very busy YouTube show that I have a precedent that usually takes up sometimes more time than it should, or sometimes it is, you know, done in such a way that, you know, most of my time ends up going to it, which is fine. That's what happens when you have a hit show. Cool deal. Anywho, one of the things I was supposed to do yesterday is, and I had advertised it, which I feel badly about, I do, but I was going to do a little bit of an experiment, and currently, as if you can hear me walking around, and I know you can, because this is a realistic show, folks. There's no, you know, assistance here. It's all me. But presently looking for the project I gave myself, because for those people who are new, my birthday is the 23rd of this fine month. The true Irishman that I am, it is very. I took a lot of pride in the fact that, well, I'm Irish, and my birthday happens to be in the middle of the greatest Irish heritage month, which, of course, is March. I'm currently trying to find what I wrote. So I'm going to find it. I found it. You're in luck. All right. So what I did was, for the guys who don't know, see, music's a part of a lot of people's lives. And I know there's always been parts of people's, there's always been songs that are very poignant in certain parts of people's lives. For me, for example, I always feel like there's always a song that represents something, some significance in part of my life. You know, all these countdowns and stuff like that, music being such an important role. And even though I didn't myself go into the music business itself, I sing here and there, and I've wrote plenty of songs in my lifetime, which are, you know, lyrics, I should say, which, you know, is fine. It's just not the same as saying I went into the music industry. I clearly won't, you know, I do it for fun, and that's about it. But I take a lot of pride, and I also, you know, recognize the importance of music and how it sometimes gets us through a lot of parts in our lives. Me, for example, sometimes it was certain music songs or, you know, different lyrics to songs that have helped me overcome a lot of adversity. When I was sick and trying to battle cancer for the first time or the second time or the third time, sometimes you need something to help you get out of bed with the pain that you feel, or when you're not feeling well or whatever. However, when you have a song sometimes that speaks to your inner yourself and gets your adrenaline going, which admittedly I am an adrenaline guy. I mean, pro wrestling and stuff like that goes along with that that adrenaline that we talk about. If my good friend decides to come on tonight, we're gonna share some memories with you know, honoring a friend of mine. Even if he doesn't, I'm gonna share some personal memories and do a tribute to a few people who I owe a lot to, who got me to where I need to be in life. But first, let's do this music thing. If our friend calls in, then we'll chat with him about that, since he's a music expert and he's in the music industry. If not, it's cool. You know, we're gonna talk. We already know we're gonna be chatting about an old friend, which I didn't realize until recently that my friend had known. So we have a mutual connection. So, without any further ado, let's get to what I called my life soundtrack. So, of course, if you don't know, I'm going to be 41 on the 23rd. Yes, I'm getting old, as my kids like to say. My son likes to point out a few gray hairs that I have. My wife does the same. And I tell them nicely to pick a few, and they have the rights to those you know, gray hairs that they choose, since they're responsible for them. No, I'm just kidding. In all honesty, I know that some people in life dread getting older, but the fact that, you know, at a young age, I was not given a lot of time in life. A lot of people wouldn't even think that I'd be able to live past a certain point. So I'm just fortunate enough that I was able to do so. So let's get to my 41 songs. Now, to be understanding, the songs that are in this list, they may not have come out exactly on that year. For the most part, I challenged myself to pick a song from that year to represent, you know, some aspect of my life. For most of these, that is the case. Some, there might be some different reason. You know, and then I also have a couple, like songs that are also just as meaningful for 41 years life. Some songs that are special meanings that might not be associated with an age or a year, but more so that have been kind of a reoccurring importance of my life. So let's get into this list, since I'm just looking up. We're not going to play these, by the way. I'm just letting you know. We're not going to. Now, first of all, I want to acknowledge I'm probably not going to play these songs, just because I don't know how that works. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, I'm going to give the recognition to the people who deserve it for said songs, and also offer my thanks to those individuals for, you know, coming up with these songs to help me get through some very, sometimes very challenging parts of my life. So, 1 second. Special acknowledgement for 1982. Since today is Friday, I want to acknowledge that my family has celebrated the Africa Friday tradition. It was a thing that I heard on the radio a long time ago, one of the stations where on Fridays, they play the song Africa by Toto. And, you know, the idea is that, you know, both the DJs, as well as, like, they'll have, like, fans and stuff like that. People call in, listeners sing along with it. And it's something that a tradition I keep alive, even though I haven't listened to that show in a long time. I don't even know if they still do it. But at 9 o'clock early in the morning that day, they always do that, which is really exciting. So, without any further ado, let us get into this 41 songs that make up part of my life and a little bit of a history of which song has what the meanings are behind them. First of all, starting in 1980, which is the year I was born, again, most of the songs, I did try to get something that was within that range that spoke to myself from that year. Some songs, like I said, have different meanings, different parts. So here we go. Another Brick in the Wall actually was on the top 14 songs of 1980, which is appropriate because Another Brick in the Wall, which is Pink Floyd, is a staple, kind of a war song of kids who rebel or kids who know to stand up for themselves and whatnot. It's always taken on that. Also, at a young age, I was exposed to the movie Pink Floyd, The Wall, and it was a very bizarre movie as a young individual. I think I saw it for the first time when I was 9. And then as I got older, it still made just as much sense, which was still a very bizarre movie. But the music to this day is, the soundtrack is phenomenal for Pink Floyd's The Wall. And another Brick in the Wall Part 2, which is, you know, historically the words, we don't need no education, we don't need no self-control, you know how it goes. But it's basically a song I always thought about when I was either going to or from school. So here we go. That was 1980. For the 1981, the song would be Journeys, Don't Stop Believing, even though I think it came out in 1982. But Don't Stop Believing, even though 82, I was 1 year, sorry, 1981. 1981, I was 1 year old. And Don't Stop Believing, I didn't know really until I was a lot older, because in 1981, although I was already talking, as my grandmother used to say, I started talking at a young age and haven't shut up since, or she used to say. But Don't Stop Believing is a very well-known song. To this day, people, still belt it out, one of the most popular karaoke songs out there. It's a generational song. People of all generations can adapt to it and associate with it. Historically sung by Journey, historically, and plenty of people try to do it. And, it's a great, being someone from sports, wrestling, and just life in general, Don't Stop Believing is one of those songs that is, probably part of someone's life who has ever started in 1980. So there you go. 1982 is Survivor's Eye of the Tiger. Those people who don't know about my wrestling career, or people who know about my wrestling career, probably know why that is an important song. Eye of the Tiger was the song that was utilized to make one of the first huge YouTube videos that the company that I worked for at the time under Jazz Fitness, BCW was the name of the company, that as Jazz Fitness, they played, one of the things that made me the YouTube sensation at that time was the fact these, parodies or these music, these what we call promos going up on YouTube. One of the early ones was a montage of me pretending to be bad at sports, which is very difficult for someone who is actually decent at sports. And Eye of the Tiger by Survivor was played in the background. So that's kind of why, 1982, that came out. 1983, Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. Being someone who's, the epitome of the F4L, there's a playlist for the F4L, and that, of course, is one of those staples, and I live by that code. I mean, if someone needs me, they know I'm not far to find. It's not hard to find me. Anywho, 1984, which is number four on the list, is Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr. Do I need to tell you what Ghostbusters is? Anyway, Ghostbusters, huge movie back in 1984. And I think I first saw it in the theater at 4 years old, believe it or not. Don't have a lot of memory of that one particularly, but I do remember seeing it again when it came back out. And I also remember this one had some significance since I've seen it 8 times in the theater. So those people who hate Ghostbusters Part 2, just know that I saw it 8 times alone when it came out. So it couldn't have been all that bad. And Ghostbusters is one of those songs, again, that is generational. You can play it at Halloween or you can play it any other time. It's an iconic song. Number 5, 1985. The song is going to be We Are the World by USA for Africa, due to the fact that it's another one of those songs that is iconic and actually came out from that year. And it was a song that was always on the radio. And I do remember it in age 5, hearing it on the radio quite a bit. And to this day, and it's a great collaboration of several different talented people in the industry at that time. Years later, we would see the new kind of breed joined together. And this is also what led into another, you know, collection of people joining in who weren't able to make that one. And that's what led into the famed, you know, there is no rain down. There's no snow in Africa, whatever it's called. It's a great song. I just butchered that. Do They Know It's Christmas is the name of the song. I'm so sorry. Two, you know, the Rock Brothers out there in the UK, because that's kind of where that came from. Anywho, number six, 1986, a song that is kind of the staple and kind of the, I guess it would be considered like the theme song to the F4L, and that's what Friends Are For by Dionne Warwick and Friends. One of the things you'll realize, I realize, is how different the music, my music tastes changed, and also how wide my movie genres, I mean, my music genre, you know, goes all over the place, which I've never been bashful about saying that I give anything a chance at least once. So that's what Friends Are For collaborates with Dionne Warwick, Gladys Estefan, Stevie Wonder, and Elton John, who I'm sure everyone else knows at least Elton John and Stevie Wonder probably. But, you know, that was a great epitome of a song in 1986. 1987 was the first song I realized that I knew the words. And before then, we didn't have YouTube or we didn't have a way to look up lyrics. And even this is even before they started coming out with them in CD, and like you used to get, you know, cassette tapes didn't always have the words to the songs until later on. But Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics was a huge song for me. It spoke a lot to me, considering growing up without a father, even though, you know, for most of the time I've made do with my mother, or I've seen a secondary person to come in to play with that. It didn't really matter to me, but it's cool. But Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics was a big song that was spoke a lot to me. And also, at a very young age, I was had the opportunity to record it, but I obviously didn't. But I did know the words because I was going to prepare to do so. And I've done it for some talent shows and stuff like that. But Living Years, Mike and the Mechanics, great song. Number eight, which would have been 1988, is going to be Toy Soldiers by Martika. I don't necessarily think it came out in 1988, but Martika's Toy Soldiers was the song that was always on the radio. And I don't even know why it spoke to me, but it did. Maybe it's because I've had my heart broken already by 1988. Already at this point, I've already been hospitalized twice. I've already been diagnosed once. And, you know, life wasn't all sunshine and rainbows, so to speak, but it was more so about, you know, relationships and friendships and stuff. And that's how I adapted it. And I was already in love with a girl from first grade. So Toy Soldiers spoke to me in that way. Number nine, which would be 1989, is going to be Toy Soldiers by Bette Midler. I mean, I think it's another song that I think everybody knows the words to. You usually hear it around someone's passing or someone giving tribute to someone who means a lot to them. I've utilized this song and performed this song several times for people who I've lost. I don't really have a lot of tears anymore. Actually, I've not cried since I was 10, which is actually a year later, which we're coming up to. But, you know, Wind Beneath the Wings, of course, from the soundtrack from Beaches, which anybody who's seen that knows it's one of those known female chick flicks, so to speak, which is also known to be a tearjerker. And I give movies just as many chances as everything else. And I'll be the first to say that as a dude, I still enjoy Beaches. I'm a sucker for friendship movies. I think that's really what this movie is about, is the power of friendship, how it lasted many generations. And, you know, it's a great song, and I've used it to signify losses that were significant for me. And I've performed it, like I said, for those people. Anywho, here we go. Number 10, which would be Blaze of Glory by Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi has a lot of big songs in my life, but Blaze of Glory, I mean, if you listen to the words, it basically tells you a lot about my life. And oddly enough, You know, it speaks a lot to me, and it's a song that I enjoy a lot. I enjoy a lot of Bon Jovi stuff, and I think he's one of the most underrated talent, another one of those underrated talents out there in the world. And, you know, or they go to one of his other hits, like, Living on a Prayer, or, you know, one of those other songs. And don't get me wrong, there have been other songs that have had some significance, but what I also try to do with this list is only pick one song for each group, so you'll notice that too. By Bon Jovi's Blaze of Glory from the hit movie soundtrack, Young Guns. Okay. And number 11, Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams, 1991. So now we're in the 90s, folks. Remember, I was born in 80. That's one of the perks of being born in the beginning of a century. It's easy to keep track of what years are which. So 1991. Everything I Do It For You, Bryan Adams from Robin Hood with Kevin Costner. The movie might not have got a lot of praise due to the fact that, you know, Kevin Costner's, you know, that's one of those films that he's been ridiculed for not doing the accent. So I guess his a couple Academy Awards and other awards have crossed out that since then. But that's a great movie. It's a great song. It's similar to a lot of other things. When it comes to females and the loves of my life, that's kind of how it is. Number 12, 1992. You probably had an idea. It was a hit from this year. And, of course, it's I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred. And those of you guys who know, again, about my wrestling career, know that that was, in fact, my entrance music for Jazz Fitness. Not one of the greatest songs in the world, but I'm Too Sexy. I've made famous again because of that a ring. So that's kind of cool. Number 13, Two Steps by Def Leppard. Def Leppard, I mean, again, another one of those groups that have a lot of significance in my life and also my family's. It was the first concert that I brought my family to, was to see Def Leppard and several other groups. Some of them will be scattered out throughout this list, but Two Steps is a song that I always resonate with a lot of my friends and stuff like that. Again, it was on the soundtrack, this time for Last Action Hero, but it's a song that I actually know and I performed for one of my go-to for karaoke's and stuff like that. And again, can't get wrong with Def Leppard in general. Another, it's one of those hair bands that a lot of people don't give the respect I think they need. I mean, if you could find a better one-armed drummer, let me know, because good luck. All right, so number 14 is Dreaming of You by Selena. So I'm going to warn you ahead of time, the next couple songs have serious significance because my life starts to change a little bit here. 13 honestly changes because 13 is when my friend was shot on Halloween night and died and bled to death in my arms at a house party on Halloween night, which to this day still regulates with me. And it was a big moment in my life, was significant. But 1980, I already went over 1993, which was Def Leppard's Two Steps. But 1994, Dreaming of You, even though I think it came out a year later, somehow I feel like I've already heard it at that point. But basically, it's to represent that year. And of course, 1994, I would meet my, you know, I would already have had relations with my girlfriend at the time. And I also was 14, and at this point I was already been active in that way, and she became pregnant, actually, on that, you know, frame there. So there's that. So in 1995, I think a lot of people know this song, and again, it came out in 2016. However, in 2015. I don't know how that's possible, but it did. It did happen. So those people, actually, I do know because it came out later in the year. That makes sense. So One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men came out, and it was a song that I remember very well because it was on the radio playing when my girlfriend on October 13th, 1994, 1995, called me to tell me that she had been attacked in an elevator by five males a little older than her. She was also 15, and they attacked her at 8 months pregnant, and we lost the baby. And that's when she called me on October 13th, 1995. That was the song that was on the radio playing when she told me that. And that's always going to resonate whenever I hear that song. I'm going to be brought back to that moment. It's not a moment that, you know, a lot of people would, you know, that would probably trigger a lot of people. And it does trigger me. I'm brought back to that moment where as a male, I feel like I failed to protect her and my son. Unfortunately, over the years, I've realized there's really not much I could have done in that situation. I wasn't able to be there. So I can't. So it was a hard time for me. That was a song that I'm reminded of what happened to her, but also blessed to know that I got my second chance years later, which we'll get into later on. So 1996, or I should say the 16th song representing 1996, is going to be Sweet Dreams by Marilyn Manson. Of course, it's a rendition or a remake or whatever they call it, of a song, which the Eurythmics did back in the 80s. Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams definitely kind of spoke to my heart back then due to the fact that my life was, I still had hope in life. I was in a place where my girlfriend had just, I lost my first son. And then a couple weeks later, my girlfriend, who I was very much in love with still, she took her own life because the pain was too much for her losing. And that happening to her always blaming herself, me who always blamed myself. And it was a sad, tragic thing that, honestly, Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams is, you know, definitely speaks to a lot of that emotions that I felt back then. And then, of course, in 1997, which is the 17th song on the list, is going to be Objects in the Rearview Mirror by Meatloaf. I think everything that's in this song I've experienced. Everything. If you guys know that Meatloaf, when I discovered Meatloaf early in the 90s, I already knew Meatloaf at this point. Objects in the Rearview Mirror came out off the Bad Out of Hell 2 soundtrack. Bad Out of Hell 2 album, I should say. And in passing, I had heard, you know, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad and, you know, other songs he had done. And, of course, you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. But none of that really resonated yet. But I remember in the 90s when I first started hearing the song, for example, I Would Do Anything for Love. And then I started listening to his other songs like this. And I realized how much we had in common. Then I started filming and started researching him and found out that we have very similar backgrounds. And the things he speaks about in Objects in the Rearview Mirror are things that I myself at 17 was already have experienced. I have, you know, in the beginning of the song, it talks about him losing a friend at a young age. I've had that a couple times over. It talks about, you know, an abusive family member. If you get the right, the extended version, it talks about the abuse of people at home, which I've experienced that. And I knew that I at some point had to leave. And at this point, 1997, I'm very proud to say that I was emancipated already at this point. And I was already living on my own. And I was actually, about a month later, I get my very first apartment. Or a couple of months later, I get my first apartment. So there you go. So I'm just going to review me. And of course, the love of life and, you know, all that stuff is also in this song. So that's why, Objects in the Rearview Mirror is a very important song for me because it really regulates that. I mean, a lot of his music does speak a lot of things as well, but why he was my role model, my hero, and he still is. I'm just thankful I got to tell him so years later. Number 18, 1998, is My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion for two reasons. One, I could never escape that song. You couldn't turn on the radio and not hear it. That was going to be the last year I'd live in a place where I'd have to be around other people. And there was some girls in the place that were obsessed with this movie. Of course, that's Titanic. and they were in love with Leonardo DiCaprio, and that we would have to hear the song over and over again in the movie over and over again. This is before DVDs existed. So they would watch the VHS, which, if you guys don't know, it's a very long movie in general, and just to sit through it over and over again, and you had to listen to the song and all that, and it's just a song you couldn't escape from. And if you listen to it, it does, again, it's a love song, and it's a girly song. A lot of people don't like Celine Dion because, you know, whatever reasons, but it is a song that kind of speaks to a lot of that. It represents that time in my life where I was around other people and you couldn't escape from it. So, Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. Number 19, you probably knew where this was going. Number 19, 1999, by the way, is going to be my graduation year, which is interesting because the song is The Graduation by Vitamin C, as it was my graduation song, one. And two, oh boy, is it my graduation song about the, you know, saying goodbye to the school life and all that stuff. And if you listen to the song, you grew up in school and you became school part of your life. I was a tri-sporter for my school, and I had a lot of school pride. So, you know, Graduation by Vitamin C was kind of the epitome of me ending that part of my life and getting ready to move on to the next chapter. I was already in wrestling school, and I was already on my way to, you know, I graduated and was also on my way to, you know, getting a laugh in my wrestling career. So, you know, it was a huge deal for me. And that was also when I would get my first wrestling contract in 1999. So anyway, big year, big song. There you go. Number 20, by my cousin, Billy Gilman. And of course, that would be Oklahoma. Because even though, you know, in passing, it's been some times that he has said there's been other songs that, you know, he's kind of thought of me doing. And I mean, years later, I would go on to write a few things that he, you know, collaborate with him and stuff, since I am a lyric guy. But Oklahoma was always a song I always felt resonated with me, because if you know the song of Oklahoma, yes, it's a country song, folks. But you know what? Don't hate on it. It was all right. It was his first shot out of the ring. He's come a long way since. But Oklahoma was about a kid who grew up in the system, so to speak, and always searched for his family and never got it, his father in general. A kid growing up in the system, and I myself, at that point, my mother was missing in action. I was in and out and around others. I never had a father, of course, but I think everybody wishes they had someone like that. And I think everyone deep down, everyone wishes they had a father who doesn't have a father. But years later, I've come to realize I didn't need it in general. So, but back then I did. So there you go. 21, which is going to be year 2021. I'm sorry, 2001. I'm sorry, I'm getting my years. Silly me. So 2001 would be the 21st song. Now, this song came out, for the record, a year later, maybe a couple of years later. But of course, it's by Daryl Worley. It's called Have You Forgotten. Because you guys will remember 2001. It was a huge, huge thing that happened here in my country, where we were attacked and, you know, a lot of things were going on and a lot of patriotic acts were going on. And I remember myself, you know, taking my stance and deciding how I was going to do things. And literally a month after 9/11, I was asked to go to a conference for the day program I was working for at the time. I was working for I was volunteering in the day program for adults with mental illness, doing my background. We're already working with people and trying to help people. And what I ended up doing was, you know, I was working with them for their social program, and I was running their social program as a volunteer. And I was asked, you know, prior to what happened at 9/11, I was asked to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee, to a conference. To represent the clubhouse that I was working for and the day program and talk about what it's like to work for them and stuff. And when 9/11 happened, you know, they gave everyone who was chosen to go, because I was, you know, chosen to go. They asked me to go, and I, you know, and everyone else who they had asked to go had backed out. They were afraid to fly. They were afraid to go anywhere. And I think a lot of people were like that back then. And I remember that I had already committed and I wasn't going to hide. It's part of my character. I don't back down from a challenge. And I also wanted to make a stance and show that I'm not going to be hiding from anyone either. And when that song came out, it was a couple of years later. There's a lot of songs like that, but Have You Forgotten was a song that I think whenever I wonder if people, you know, remember what happened there and to me, it just speaks about courage and it speaks about, you know, why, you know, everyone else can be blinded by it. And you can choose to stick your head in the sand and hide, or you can choose to face it head on. And that's personally what I take from that song. That's why that resonates for that, 2001. 2002, My Sacrifice by Creed. 2022, I was heavily in my wrestling career. At that particular time, I was working for between Ring of Honor and ECW, Top Rope, and a few other places like that, Ring of Honor especially. And I met some good friends of mine who have been lifelong since through in ECW and from Ring of Honor. Some of them still work today in the business. Me, myself, my body won't let me do a lot of that stuff anymore. But My Sacrifice that came out there in 2002 by Creed was a song that, yeah, it was used in a wrestling promo. Because of how much you have to give up to be part of that life, to become, to get those dreams and get those goals. There's a lot of things you have to give up, a lot of things you got to do. It's about the work you got to put in and about the, you know, forgetting about the physical pain to get your goal going. And that's kind of what I take away from it. So My Sacrifice by Creed, 2002. 2023, Behind Blue Eyes by Limp Bizkit, a remake of another song. By The Who, but Behind Blue Eyes is another one of my go-to karaoke songs because, well, in case you didn't know, I have hazel eyes. My eyes do change color, however. Sometimes they're blue, sometimes they're green, sometimes they're gray, depending on my mood and what I'm wearing, but Behind Blue Eyes is a song that has a lot of meaning probably too, but for me, I mean, it even talks about vengeance in it, which you guys know that my, you know, wrestling name, my early wrestling name, and also my early nickname that the kids in high school gave me was Jazz Vengeance. That character, I mean, the nickname already existed. And in that song, that comes up a few times in the song. I always thought that was kind of cool. But also because, you know, in 2003, I was injured. And, you know, a lot of people might have had doubts in my abilities. And a lot of people might have had, you know, looked at me like weird. I was also at a point where the people I was surrounding myself with, I was second guessing, are these real friends? Do they even know anything about me? People doubted what I could do, what I couldn't, it doubted my abilities to do anything after I was injured. And I ended up going back to school, went to college. And a lot of people said, oh, you're not going to be able to finish college while I was injured. And I remember saying, well, not only am I going to enter college, I'm going to go leave here with 2 degrees. They said, that's too much. You can't do that. And I went ahead and earned 2 degrees, as you guys all know. So, that song is pretty important for that point. So Behind Blue Eyes, for the lyrics alone, speaks a lot about me. And again, it says my name in it. So can't go wrong there as far as vengeance goes. Number 24, My Immortal by Evanescence. Listen to the song lyrics, you'll know why. My daughter actually does a really good job singing that song too. But, you know, I could also listen to her sing all day because she's an amazing voice. Much better than I am, but she's a great, very talented young lady. But anywho, that's not floating about my daughter. She's awesome, though. And 25, Toby Keith's As Good As I Once Was. Oh boy, did that speak. 25. That's a 25. So I'm already midway point in my 20s. I'm injured. I'm about ready to end. My injury is just about healed. And I'm about to graduate from college again, in the middle of my college career. And about a year or two later after this, I go back to the ring. So, you know, this is where I'm kind of questioning myself. Am I as good as I once was? And, you know, I'm not as young. And even though I'm 25, I've already had the life that most people have. And I've already overcome cancer now twice at this point, as well as been homeless, as well as overcome everything else in my life. And as well as, you know, everything I've done in wrestling and everything all the accomplishments at this point. And I'm 25 now. What else is there left to do? And there you go. 26. Life is a highway. Rascal Flatts. We travel a lot, my family and I. And also I travel a lot for wrestling and everything else. But also it's one of my son's favorite songs. But, you know, so a lot of meaning there between Life is a Highway by Rascal Flatts. Also, he's, you know, from one of his favorite movies, The Cars. So you have that too. 27. This is a fun one right here. So we always have those relationships in our lives that we always have those relationships that, you know, everyone has that, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And for whatever reason, they choose not to, you know, they, for whatever reason, they just don't work. And at this particular time in my life, my the girl that I was dating at the time, this is the song she would always dedicate it to me. It was always on the radio with her. It was her ringtone for me. It was also, it was a lesson that sometimes, you know, it's best to listen to your gut and end it before it gets too crazy. And that's kind of what I took out of the relationship. Of course, that's Bubbly by Cobie Collette. My friends would say, what are you doing? She was a little younger than me. She was 23. And at that point, I was 27. So, you know, I didn't see it much of a big deal, only it was because, you know, her friends were just in their early 20s. And I felt like the chaperone of the group. I got word that my friend's trying to get in. So if he comes in, calls in shortly, we'll have to interrupt there and go there. So I'm just going to try to go through this really quick and then we'll bring him in if he calls. So here we are. No One by Alicia Keys. Smile by Uncle Cracker, another song my son made famous. My wife was her song to dance with him during her wedding. Firework by Katy Perry was a song I used to do a photo collage for my niece and my nephew. Home by Phillip Phillips, because, come on, I need to make a home for my wife and my two kids. And at that point, it was time for us to start settling in. And that's what I was trying to do. Hey Ho by Lumineers. It's one of our gaming songs. We ever play games at our house. We're a big board game family. That's the song that always usually comes up. Wrecking Ball, Miley Cyrus. Plenty of times there. Stay With Me, Sam Smith, the song my son dedicated to me at one point. And it was a song that, you know, when I thought of the lyrics and stuff like that, I thought it was very sad. And this is a point in our lives where me and my wife were starting to come, she was my fiance, and we were starting to come back together as one. As I said, my wife and I have been off and on for many years, and this is around the time period we were looking at each other. Maybe we should just, you know, stick together for a while. The Fight Song by Rachel Platten, for 35. And The Fight Song is a great song. Keeps me going and keeps me young and kept me fighting during some very dark parts of my life. And boy, did it help me get out a lot of times. Heathens, 21 Pilots. Oh boy, do I know that one too. Boston by Augustina for 37. Electricity by Elton John for 38. Forever by Kiss. It was our wedding song. Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson for 40. Now looking back, oh boy, does that have meaning. Here's to Us at 41. That's this year coming up. By Hailstorm. Boy, does that one, isn't that accurate, huh? It's a great song, even though it's from a female perspective, whatever, and I'm sure it is coming from a place where, you know, she probably had her heart broken or whatever, but I get that, whatever the case may be. But what is it? That song speaks to a lot of my, I think about my family, my wife and my family, my kids, and everything I've gone through, everything we've gone through together, and everything we've overcome to become part of one. And it's a song that I really has a lot of special meanings for that. And some kind of, for a kind of, you know, special kind of a meaning songs, Full Circle by Aerosmith, Defiant by Ronan Park, since I wrote the lyrics, Safe by Westlife, since I, again, helped with the lyrics, We're Young by Fun, because I couldn't escape from the song, and Africa by Toto, as I already mentioned, and we know why. And there you have it. So, that's it, folks. That is my life set to music. Isn't that exciting? So, here we are. And I got word that he wants to, you know, so, here I am. I got word that our performing artist might be coming on because I'm going to pay some tributes to an old friend. And this is going to be fun to hear from someone different perspective. It's always fun to kind of learn from people who, or hear different people's aspects and people who have gotten you where you are in life. It's always good to pay tribute to those who have helped you in life as well. And our friend, as it turns out, we have a mutual acquaintance we didn't even know about. So, can't wait to bring him on to talk about him. We're talking about the man who I owe my wrestling career to. So, should find out soon. So, waiting it along. Awaiting McNeezy. All right, we're waiting our friend to come in. Fun, but kill some of time, you know. We're waiting our friend to call in from wherever he is. We'll have to get his, find out what's going on with his show as well. Anywho, yes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start telling you about who I want to pay tribute to. And as we're getting ready to talk about this individual who, unfortunately, he's no longer part of our physical world, but he is a person who is a very significant part of my life because, again, I owe him my wrestling career. He taught me more about wrestling. And I think it was supposed to be just a wrestling school, but it goes to show you, you can actually learn a lot more if you absorb it. And I was someone who was a sponge. And not only did I adapt what he taught me about wrestling, but also used in other aspects of my life as well. And I'm talking about the legendary late great Walter Killer Kowalski, whom I studied under, in which was wrestling school way back and started in 1998. I was 18 and, played about a year with him, maybe a couple of years with him, and then he went on to promote me, help me get my first job in wrestling, and then really was a mentor to me for my early part of my wrestling career. And still to this day, I still remember a lot of what he did for me. I remember that during our practices, I don't know if it was something that he did just for me or if it was something other people did. I had never seen it perform. I'm sure he still does, but I'm sure he did it for other people. I'm sure other people, but he did a thing for me for promo ability, because you could see that I was comfortable with the microphone, and he knew that I did a lot of public speaking about bullying and stuff like that. And you know, famously, he would be the one who said that the name that I had in high school would probably be the best one for me. And also, I mean, the other people who helped me train as well. Walter was, you know, one who ran the school, Killer Kowalski School of Wrestling, up in Malden, Mass. And, oh boy, what a different place it was. We're going to chat about that when my friend gets on, see how he thinks of it. But from an outside person, anyone who's ever been to the school or been to Kowalski's, you know, it's kind of a different than you'd be, I believe, what a wrestling school would be. Kind of got to go downstairs. And you always think of the famed dungeon in Calgary under Stu Hart whenever you think of it. And a lot of people would be amazed to know how big Walter was in real life. Even towards the end, he was a massive human being. When he was older, he would hunch over a lot, but he was huge. His hands were gigantic. And I remember my first day in wrestling school, first class, there was about 50 people in the class. It had a pretty big class on the first day. And, you know, he and the trainer Slick Wagner Brown and April Hunter, I believe it was, who was helping him out. They were our trainers. And they, you know, he said, look at the people next to you. They're not all going to make it toward the end. And we're going to find out if you're cut out or not. And one of the things that they implemented to me was was promo school. But prior to that, he did this thing. I remember, you know, he was going over what we're going to be learning in the school, what we're going to go into learn in the class and all these other things. And what's great is that the one of the students who was with us, he was a big guy. He was about 6'6". And it was a big muscle guy, long hair, whatever. You know, Walter was going over what we're going to be learning, and he had, and the kid made the mistake you never say to someone from, you know, that era, and to this day ever. And he said, "Why? Well, it's all fake anyway, isn't it?" Well, Walter said, "Oh, it's fake. Come in here. Let me show you." So the big guy comes in the ring. Now, Walter is a little old, not a little old man. He's a big old man. And he came in the ring, the guy, and he goes, "Let me show you how fake it is." And he put the claw, the famed stomach claw on this guy. The guy was on the mat about 2 seconds, and he was screaming in pain. And Walter goes, "How fake is this? Tell people, how fake is this?" And oh man, I can just remember this big guy. And, you know, you would have thought this guy would be, you know, real tough guy, but he said that's a Walter, and Walter took him down 2 seconds with that stomach claw. His hands were giant, like huge. And when you put you on the claw, you were all done. I didn't care how big you were, like this guy found out. And he found out wrestling's fake right up until you hit the mat. That's what I usually say when someone asks me, because there's no faking gravity. And, you know, a lot of people can, you know, hate on it or make assumptions of it, but there's just certain aspects that it's naive and idiotic to think is fake. All of it. It may be choreographed, it may be predetermined. It's definitely not fake. Athleticism is real. Psychology is real. The physical aspects are real. I've seen people get seriously hurt in the ring. I myself have been physically hurt in the ring. And it wasn't even something I was at fault for, but you know, Walter's a good guy, and Walter, when I say Walter, it, you know, you really have to be at that level, and it's because of how important he was to not only me, but, he's just a legend in the area, to any wrestling area. They have a Kowalski tournament to honor him. When you go to work for the WWE, Vince McMahon came up with the Vince McMahon, with the Killer Kowalski safety test, because people who trained at Kowalski's school, and Kowalski himself was known to be a very safe wrestler. He's a very dangerous guy, don't get me wrong. He was a tough guy in his era. You know, the stories about him are true. He was very physical, very stiff, if you want to say it that. But when you work with someone like Kowalski, and he taught us all this, you knew a couple things. One, they were going to be properly trained. Two, you knew they were going to be safe. And, you know, if someone who was trained by Kowalski, famous students of Kowalski's other than just myself, Triple H, maybe you heard of him, China, Alex Shelley, not Alex Shelley, I'm sorry, Frankie Kazarian, it was quite a few of us came from the school. Some people are still around in the area. Perry Saturn, John Cronus, who he actually had come in to talk to us one point and actually had me do my promo thing that they invented for me that I'm telling you, I was intimidated because, you know, Perry Saturn and John Cronus, they're the eliminators of ECW. And, you know, Perry Saturn, you know, a lot of people, I got to thank Perry Saturn many years later, actually just recently. A couple of years ago, I got to thank Perry Saturn. A lot of people have said that Perry Saturn is kind of feeling not so healthy right now. But I got to tell you that when I talked to Perry Saturn and I thanked him and I told him a little bit about what I had to do with him, it was him who had, you know, he smiled. He was almost like he remembered it. I don't know if he did or not, but I remember having to cut the promos on him and John Cronus, who were guests at that time. And that's kind of what, you know, they invented for me, was that at the end of every single session, at the end of the day, I would be expected to cut a promo on everyone who is at the school, the trainers and the students, and they'd be different every time. And, you know, some people who are kind of pretending to be heel, some people who were portraying heel, I had to cut heel, face promos on, and those who were faces, I had to cut heel promos on. Promos is, you know, talking smack or whatever you want to call it. And that actually is what I'm mostly known for. This is why what led into me being, you know, the host of the fitness center, because of the ability I have to be hot with a stick. In 2003, oddly enough, was the year I was injured, would be when I would make one of the wrestling magazines as one of the best talkers of the year. And it was a huge honor for me. And I owe that to Kowalski and Slick Wagner Brown and all those people who gave me that time in the ring to do that. Again, I don't know if it's something that anybody else has ever done, but I had to do that. And when they had guests come in, like, you know, Perry Saturn and John Cronus, so people like that, and, you know, they're monsters compared to a lot of me. Now, I'm 6 feet tall. And as the promo goes, I'm 6 feet tall, 245 pounds. At that time, I was 210. Man, myth, legend, Jazz Vengeance, don't be afraid to terrify, was how it went. But, you know, in wrestling, 6 feet tall, you're very short compared to the demographic. Most wrestlers are pretty decent. Most wrestlers are at least 6'2", 6'3", on average. There's a lot of people in the wrestling business who believe you need to be a certain height in order to, you know, kind of be the show. So there's that. Yeah, so here we are. But I just remember everything that he did for me, and I was actually there at his funeral. I was one of the few people who was lucky enough to carry the casket and be a pallbearer. That's actually where I met Paul Levesque. You guys know better, Triple H, for the first time, and Stephanie and a lot of the people who were there, former students and people in the dignitaries of wrestling, pretty much. Famously, Pat Patterson would, you know, get help from Killer Kowalski as well. Killer was very, very knowledgeable, very wise, and he taught a lot of the scientifically, the chess, so to speak. A lot of the things he taught us was how to call matches in the ring while you're in the ring. For the, you know, it makes it go smoother and better when you're doing that. Nowadays, they teach you to do everything before you go to the ring. You talk out the match before you even go to the ring. One of the things about that was known for Kowalski schools and their students is how well they usually performed and how you really wouldn't have to do too much to get them to where they needed to be. And that usually is the case. Usually, you don't need much to get to point A if you give them the point C. My promos, for example, nowadays, like WWE, that whatever, they use like script writers or whatever. But for me, and you know, people who from Kowalski's for the most part, or in general, you know, all I need is like a time frame, the bullet points, and I'll get you there. I was told one time, as Jazz Fitness, I was told to piss off the crowd, make them angry, get heat from the crowd in this dive bar in a not so nice area. And I said, well, just make sure I was a heel at the time. So I said, well, just make sure security's on point then, because I'll do it. It's just going to be, I just need to make sure the security's there because this is going to get ugly. And of course, you know, I got the heat. And, you know, back in the early days of wrestling, when it got to be really like, when fans, you know, people don't understand like when how wrestling was back, like even before the 80s, in different territories and stuff, how fans would get so massive and so angry and so involved in the show and so, you know, obsessed, if you would, that they would threaten harm on the wrestlers. And like today's wrestlers have nothing like that. It's not that popular compared to where it was back then. Like, if you hear about some of these stories from like Texas wrestling, which, by the way, you can learn these things when you go to a good wrestling school. They'll teach you the history of wrestling. I'm someone who is a sponge to learn wrestling knowledge. So I actually enjoy listening to old stories. Some people call them war stories. So that's cool. We got a call coming in. It's probably our friends. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the F4L headquarters. This is yours truly, the icon Sean Jazz Stevens. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, what's going on, man? This is McNeely.
Oh, excellent. It is our friend.
How you doing, brother?
Oh, look. Hey, I'm living the dream, brother. Living the dream. How are you?
I'm living somebody else's dream, man.
You know, it's funny. I usually say it's someone's dream. I don't know whose it is, but, you know, someone has a sick mind, I guess.
Yeah, isn't it insane, huh?
Yeah, longer than it should have been.
What? Hey, have you gotten your coronavirus pandemic vaccination?
How about what? The vaccination?
Have you gotten your yes.
Not yet. I haven't gotten to that point yet. I guess I gotta wait to wave or something. I guess I'm not in the demographic. Where I am, you have a certain demographic apparently.
What demographic do you have to be in?
Well, I guess it also has to go into tiers and for example, they're going with. From what I understand, they go in, like, order of importance, I guess. So, like, elderly people or people who are heavily, like, at risk, they get it first. And then first responders, like doctors, nurses, and so forth. Because my wife is in the third tier, and I'd probably be in that because she works in a supermarket and she has to deal with a lot of people. And at one point, they were essential workers because they're the only ones that could be open. But she's in the third wave of when we're allowed to go. And I think I'm in that wave because I deal with people like that too. So I guess I got to wait till that wave, whenever that gets green lighted. Have you got it yet?
Yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
All right. Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? So.
I hear you. I wish I could get it. I wouldn't mind getting it. I feel like as soon as you get it, I feel like maybe, possibly, things get back to semi-normal. We hope. I'm hoping, though, sure that we're going to get the green light to get it done so I can get that done and get back to life as normal.
You know, I was
or
seeing
whatever
people standing,
normal is.
I was seeing people standing in line, you know, how they do the makeshift the vaccination centers and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, they're just standing there, like, hooting and hollering and, you know, just waiting in line.
You know, I think it comes from, the convention days or going to shows. You're probably used to, waiting in line to go to a show, or you see people waiting to go see you at a show. And you get used to waiting around if you get a good amount of people to wait around with. You know what I mean?
I was watching on the news.
Yeah.
I was watching on the news the other day, right? And the Israelis, they have to show a passport, a vaccination passport, to be able to get into, events and stuff like that.
Oh, really? I wish we could have it.
Did you see anything about that?
No, I don't watch the news a lot because it usually tends to be all the same stuff over and over again. I keep in touch with a lot of the things. Like, I know a lot of, as far as going to events and stuff, I keep on top of that because, you know, I'm a thing doer. I like to go places and do things. And unfortunately, this thing has killed a lot of that. it's not a fun time for people who like to go out and do things.
Definitely not.
I
see.
I was actually just talking about someone you may know. I was just talking about giving, I was just telling the people about giving tribute to my trainer, the guy who trained me. And I heard from him earlier in the week saying you might know him as well. That would be my good friend, Walter Killer Kowalski, the late great.
Killer Kowalski, huh? Yeah, I met him once.
Yeah? See, I'm always interested to hear from a fan's perspective. Tell us about when you met Killer Kowalski.
Man, I put my hand in his hand. I felt like I was a little child.
Which is awesome. Yeah, his hands are huge, right?
Yes, sir. It was like a catch's mitt.
Yeah, it really was. It was just funny because I was just saying about how my first day in wrestling school, there was this big guy in the class with us. So the first day, it was like 50 people in our class. And this big guy made the mistake when Walter was going over, what we're going to be going over. And he's like, well, what do we need to learn all that for? It's all fake anyway, said the student. Would-be student to Kowalski, which is not a good, smart thing to say to someone, especially from his
wrestling.
Era. Yeah, telling a wrestler from, especially from Walter's, generation, that wrestling's fake. Well, Walter brought him into the ring, and you talked about the size of his hands, which is funny, because I just got done saying how big they were, so at least that's validated right there. And
yeah, the man's hands were huge.
He put the stomach claw on this guy. This was actually one of Walter's finishes, was that dreaded claw. And he put the stomach claw on this big guy. He was 6'6", this guy, big muscle guy. And Walter put that stomach claw on him. He was on that mat in 2 seconds in pain. He goes, how fake is it now? Yeah. So, he did a lot of crazy. Oh, I kid you not. He took that stuff seriously. And I still, a lot of people – are like that. He's lucky he got off that. A person who wants to train to be a wrestler, and you tell a person like Kowalski that wrestling's fake. There's been stories of people coming very near getting hurt by saying such a thing to someone from any era, really. But as I tell people,
there's nothing
fake,
fake
right
about
up until you hit the mat. Right up until you hit the mat, it's fake.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's no faking gravity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you getting smashed with a 4x4.
Yeah,
nothing fake about that.
Yeah, there's certain aspects. It's funny how a lot of people have the assumptions of, something like wrestling. Oh, it's fake. It might be, predetermined. You might know who's going to win and lose prior to going out there, but not necessarily. It's about how you get there. And there's nothing fake in falling 20 feet from the top of the turnbuckle and missing. And the ring is not as comfortable as it looks. A lot of people think there's springs under there. I've heard all these stories before. Like a lot of people who have never put, and I'll tell you, one of the first things you do when you start out in wrestling is you put together the rings at all these shows, right? So as of someone who has put together many wrestling rings, I can tell you certain things that are not under the ring people claim them to be. There's no microphone under there. There's no springs. It's basically beams that are laid across the bottom of the underneath everything. They're very long beams.
Yeah.
And then you put plywood on top of that. And then there's a very thin layer of padding, and that's your ring.
Wow.
And, you know, it's not the most comfortable. I mean, you know how to fall because, you know, that's where you go to wrestling school. Learn how you don't kill yourself doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Again, there's no faking reality. You know, you can't fake gravity. That's not something that can be done. You don't have wires
or
stuntman or anything like that.
No stuntman at all.
Like that. Not at all. So.
Yeah, let's buffer that. So let's buffer that out. And well, the stuntman jumps in.
Yeah, it's a fun times, let me tell you. But, yeah. So, being someone who likes to perform and stuff like that, how is this whole thing affecting, you know, like you, for example?
Yeah, well, there's really nothing going on right now, you know?
I do, unfortunately.
Absolutely nothing. A whole lot of nothing, you know?
Unfortunately, too well.
Yeah, I see all these memories and everything on Facebook and Instagrams and Twitters.
Yeah, the times when, you know, things were simply just go out and do things. You take those things for granted, you know?
Yes, sir.
I know that my wife and I worked for the company back then. I still, you know, I was working as a writer for WWE back the beginning of the 2020. And I was actually there working, kind of. And my wife was there. And, you know, what I pointed out to her was, you know, years later, like, we offered the kids to come with us. And our kids decided, you know, they didn't want to go. My son's not really one for the pyrotechnics and stuff, even though they didn't really have any. But, and my daughter was, you know, doing her own thing. They weren't college and stuff. Getting old now. But they didn't want to come with us, but I said to them, I say, well, you know, the fact that you guys didn't go to that event, and that was in February when we went to that wrestling show, was in Boston. And again, that was like, you know, towards the end of my wrestling, working for the writing. And that was, it turned out that was, you know, that was in late February, and a month later was March. So everything was shut down right at that point. So that's how quickly things change.
I'll tell you,
it sure does. You know, usually right around now, I would be getting ready for my trip to Jersey. I always go to that show in Jersey every year, the convention that my friends do, the Higgins, the Monster Mania convention down there in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Really
okay.
Fun time. And usually I'm ready to go to that around now. And, of course, with everything going on, that got postponed to May as of right now. I'm hoping it happens in May. you know, kind of keeping track of that. As you know, I don't really go on Facebook as far as the Facebook aspect of it goes, because I just don't have time for Facebook. But I do know that they have like a Facebook group page or in a Facebook, you know, regular page that people have been keeping on track of. I don't go on that because I don't want Facebook, but my wife keeps an eye on it, so I'm hoping I get some good news. But I do talk to Dave quite a bit, who eventually, you know, like you are right now, he'll come on the show like we are right now at some point. Dave, cool peoples. But, yeah, we're waiting on hearing about that. We haven't heard anything yet. And then May is going to be here before you know it. I feel like that anyway. So,
I'm having a little technical difficulties over here.
Technical
difficulties.
Sure,
what's going on?
Can you hear me? Are you able to hear me or no? All righty. Seem to have lost. We seem to have lost our friend McNeezy. Well, it's too bad. Interesting stuff. All right, folks. Well, maybe we'll call back. You never know. But, anyhow, so, yeah, we're paying tribute to Kowalski. So, as I just got done telling you guys how big his hands were, you know, our friend who had met him, that his hands aren't that big. He confirmed that one for you. And a wicked nice guy, so very knowledgeable and stuff like that. So what's everyone doing the weekends? For those people who have been binge-watching everything under the Tuscan sun, you know that the last episode of WandaVision is up on Disney Plus. I know my wife has been heavily watching it. I haven't, admittedly. You know, just, it's not that I don't like Marvel shows and it's not big, whatever else. It's just, you see, I have to be invested in the character of Marvel for me to get into the Marvel movie, if that makes any sense. Now, the Avengers and things of that nature, we started as a family. And also the people in that group are kind of impressive, you know, kind of impressive in general. Again, I think a lot of those characters are, in my eyes, overrated, but they're still important to the comic book genre. There are some characters in the comic world that I don't feel need a whole show or movie about. And then I also feel that there's a lot of characters that should have a movie that don't, and that, you know, I have to wonder why. It's great that they're going to bring out a movie with Morbius, which, that's cool. I guess for me, and also the fact that I'm a wrestling purist, I'm not a wrestling, a movie, comic purist as much as everything else, is the fact that WandaVision is talking about the Scarlet Witch. And those of you guys who are know your stuff, you know, the Scarlet Witch is actually a villain Marvel. And kind of like the idea of a female Joker kind of an idea, or Catwoman, I guess, in DC. So when they made a TV show about her, I often wondered, like, how far can they go that people will be invested in watching in a series about a villain? Well, we found out, and my wife's been heavily invested. I think her sister's been watching it quite a bit, and they've been going back and forth talking about that. And it's always good to have those kinds of shows that you can call up someone and say, hey, you know, have you caught the episode of such and such? This used to be what I grew up with. You know, you used to, you know, go to school in the morning on the next day when something would, you know, transpire and you talk about it at school. Back in the day, they used to also call it the water cooler talk. You talk about it at work at the water cooler. You talk about what happened on Dallas or what have you. Of course, I found out at a young age and during those times that the shows that I was watching, not all the other kids were. I was always impressed whenever I heard anybody talk about wrestling, because I watched a lot of that, and, you know, it was rare that people just talked about wrestling back then. It wasn't really something you bragged about watching. It was almost, you were a closet, you were a wrestling fan, if there was such a thing. Actually, there is. That's what they call them, people who claim not to be wrestling fans, are closet wrestling fans. So, there's that. But I remember, like, in fifth grade, for example, 90210 was a big show, as was Party of Five. And I remember all the girls wanted to know what was going on with Dylan and, you know, Matt LeBlanc and all, not Matt LeBlanc, Dylan on 90210 and the various, you know, girl talk about what was going on 90210. The guys, I remember, boys, me, giving the girls a hard time about being in such a show, but yet then we'd go and talk about, you know, what was going on in, like, Ninja Turtles or Family Matters, you know, things of that nature. But I knew I was a little different considering the shows I watched, like Wonder Years, The Dinosaurs, Married with Children. Married with Children especially, I got a lot of eyebrows raised. There were older family members who didn't like me watching Married with Children because, to be clear and to be honest, it was a show that more is geared towards adults, but it was a show that I understood. I mean, my background and how I grew up, it's kind of how it is, you know? So, kind of stunk. I mean, it stinks when you have a show that you like that you, you know, no one else knows about, but it is always fun when you have the show that everyone does. Years later, like I said before on this show and the old one, is that there was a long time I didn't watch television, wrestling here and there, but there was nothing I was watching probably most of the late mid thousands to late thousands, I was having a hard time watching. So there's nothing on there. And then, of course, you know, The Walking Dead would come on, and then I would get invested again in TV. And, you know, that's kind of how that worked. Walking Dead came in, and then I think the Goldbergs started and some other things like that. They really did away with, you know, the old family sitcoms that we grew up with. I'm very happy and thankful that they made the return to things like The Conners, which is, you know, continuation of Roseanne. When they said they were going to bring back Roseanne, I thought that was awesome. Same thing with The Conners. It's the same show, by the way. Different name. And one person missing. That's it. But, you know, that was an iconic show back in the 80s. It was always one of those shows that, you know, wasn't afraid to take on important family subject matters in a very convincing and honest way, but in a comical aspect. That's something we, as a family growing up in that era, that's what, kind of how we look at things. I was a very sarcastic person in general. So I got a lot of that humor and I enjoyed a lot of that. Oddly enough, I think back then, a lot of people, as far as the, from the guy's point of view, a lot of people had a crush on Becky, her character, because, you know, Becky was, you know, the blonde and, you know, into things and was kind of pretty, right? Well, I was always drawn to Darlene, who was like the darker and more sarcastic one, because of her, the fact that she's a darker and more sarcastic one. And, I mean, seeing how Christina Ricci, who I was introduced first in Mermaids and then, you know, Mermaids and then, of course, Addams Family and things like that. I mean, that was my first crush, was Christina Ricci. So, you know, I guess I like the dark, I guess, aspect of things. My wife, beautiful woman, I love my wife. And, you know, she's not your traditional, you know, she's very much one of the dudes. She has a, you know, kind of the guy's way of thinking sometimes, which I think is awesome. She's only half an inch shorter than me. So that's always something that was intrigued me about my wife. She's half an inch shorter than I am. I'm pretty tall, and I guess I like tall women anyway, so there you go. You're just not tall to me. But, yeah, so it's cool stuff. But, you know, there was a time period there was nothing, there's no shows out there. They were doing a lot of these reality shows, The Survivors and the American Got Talent. Now, granted, I went on America's Got Talent, but as far as watching these things on a regular basis, there was always some reality show, and I'm not into those. You know, watching these shows with these families that no one's ever heard of prior to having a show. And frankly, I don't know why we should care about these people. Back in the day, when you have a sitcom, they have storylines that are scripted storylines that you know is scripted and that, you know, have structure to them. Reality shows are similar in the sense that they are scripted and that they're usually predetermined and they're fake, but they're perceived as real. I put that in quotation marks. Because reality shows really aren't real. They're usually very set up and very stagey. We've seen that and learned more about that as time goes on. But, you know, a lot of the times I'll ask questions like why, like, for example, the Kardashians and people like that. Sometimes, and my kids will point this out jokingly sometimes, sometimes I wonder if I'm really as into the pop culture scene as I used to be. I don't know if that's just me. I'm 40. I'm going to be 41. Is it that I'm getting older, or is it the fact that things are changing and who celebrities are is changing? What constitutes a celebrity? For me, for example, a celebrity is someone who is either in TV and film or writing a book or, you know, was in government or something. Someone who's in front of the public eye quite a bit was a celebrity. You know, to be someone's sibling or, you know, daughter, son, whatever, was not, didn't constitute you being a celebrity unless you yourself was in the business, like a Drew Barrymore or, you know, someone like that, their family who is in business and, you know, all that. But people like their Kardashians, I couldn't even tell you. I had to ask people who they were, and then I want someone to tell me why they're celebrities. And I haven't had anyone explain it to me yet. Why they're Kardashians, I'm told that they have a reality show, but what does that mean to me that they have a reality show? I don't know who the Kardashians are. Why do I care? In doing research, I found out that they're the daughters of O.J. Simpson's lawyer, I guess. So why do we care about the Kardashians? Why do we care about their daughters? They're rich? Who cares? That doesn't... See, that's what I mean by how the aspects has changed. When does being rich make you a celebrity? There's been plenty of people who've been rich in the past, but they weren't considered celebrities. For one thing, you didn't know that they were rich because they didn't glorify it for the most part. So, this is that. But yeah, you know, looking back, you know, all these things that I grew up with, and you see things change in the 41. When you listen to the songs, for example, that I chose to represent my part of the life, you can see how they gradually change, but also kind of stick to the same. But, you know, generally speaking, if you look at my list of songs that I grew up with, my TV lists, you know, kind of go all over the place as well. That's kind of cool. But, you know, in aspects of, you know, TV and film and so forth. It's kind of disheartening a long time to not to have something to be able to talk about a lot with a film or something. So it's kind of cool. But it is what it is. It is what it is. So that's kind of how the demographic goes. But as far as shows that I'm watching right now, currently, I watch, you know, The Good Doctor with the talents of Freddie Highmore. I think I talked about this the last time I did a review on things. So not a lot has changed. I know The Walking Dead is going to be wrapping up. And part of the reason why I tried to give other things a chance is because I knew that eventually The Walking Dead was going to go off the air. Now, it's also kind of sad and funny at the same time as the show that I was so heavily involved with for such a long time. On Sundays, I had to watch The Walking Dead. I think everyone had, it's good to have that feeling, though. They have that kind of passion about a show. They, oh, such and such is on. I have to see this. But now with modern times, it's like, oh, well, I missed it, so I'll just catch it on, you know, whatever streaming service it's on. But back in the day, you know, if you didn't tune in on Mondays for Alf at 8 o'clock or on Tuesdays at 9 o'clock for Arrow Zane or whatever, then you were going to miss out on whatever else was going to see. And then there was no such thing as a spoiler thing because no one did that back then. There was nowhere to see it. The only way to find out what happened is by the next day. The people would talk about it at school or at the water cooler, like we said. And that's kind of how that worked. Or sometimes it'd be like a review afterwards somewhere. But for the most part, you know, that aspect has died. So it's sad, but it is what it is. But it's always good to have those when you are able to have them. Now with, you know, the streaming services and so forth, I'm not so certain that is so much, oh, I have to be home at such and such a time for such and such a thing. Because with the convenience of everything, you just, you know, can go to whatever it is at whatever particular time. And then you can watch it on streaming services. Admittedly, I do that. Actually, I think it started because there was a long time when I was watching South Park, for example, and I have to watch it at Wednesday at 10 o'clock. And if I missed it, oh boy. And same thing with The Walking Dead. I had to watch The Walking Dead, but if I didn't catch the 9 o'clock thing, I knew that after The Talking Dead, the same one would be rebroadcast. Now, I bowled on Sundays, so that worked out well for me. So if I was late missing something, I could just watch it after the fact. Or if there was something else on, like a wrestling show or something that went over at 11 o'clock, the next episode of The Walking Dead, that episode that I had missed would be on right after that. And then I found out that I could easily just get the DVDs when they came out. That's actually how I started doing things, where it was easier just getting the seasons, the DVD seasons, seasons in DVD rather, because I could watch it at my own length and at my own pace, and I didn't have commercials, which I'm not overly fond of commercials, to be honest. So that I found out was convenient enough. So that was cool. So anyway, it was very exciting and stuff like that. So today, currently, the shows that I usually bounce around from are, like I said before, The Good Doctor. I watch, now they're pretty much on, admittedly, I have to watch them on Hulu because I don't even know what time or what day that's on. I watch The Conners religiously when I can. American Housewife, very, very underrated, funny show. And also it's sad that a lot of the shows that I did like, I found out that a lot of other people don't. So maybe my taste is different than everybody else's. The Kids Are All Right, for example, that was Jack Gore and Andy Walken and people like that, and a slew of other people. It was basically the one year set in the 70s or the 50s. And I'm sad to say that, you know, that was the aspect of that, and unfortunately. So, but they canceled that. I liked Speechless was a great show too. Very inspirational, very uplifting. Unfortunately, and I don't know what it is about poor Meanie Driver, but she's not meant to do television apparently, because every show that she's associated with, it always gets canceled. That makes me sad because she's a tremendous actress, and I've liked a lot of the shows she's been on, but shortly enough, it's on for maybe one or two seasons, then it's off. And I'm not saying it's associated with her, but it's just coincidental. About a Boy, Speechless, I think it was something else. It's not meant to last, and that makes me sad, because like I said, she's talented, and it's a great show. There's that, too. So, there you go. But, you know, Ozark was a good show with Jason Bateman. Very surprisingly, I got into Ozark. I didn't think I was. It's amazing how sometimes you think you're not going to like something, but you're like, okay, finally, let's see what all the hubbub's about. And then you watch it, and you're like, okay, that's what all the hubbub's about. And that's always fun, too, when you're proven to be wrong about something. So that happens too. So. And that's happened to me. Admittedly, that's happened to me. There's been shows that I've said, I'm not going to like this. I'm not going to watch this. And, you know, then I watch it. I'm like, oh, that's why. I think the one that comes to mind recently is probably Cobra Kai. And that's because, you know, I listened to everyone else in the world tell me what it was about and all these other things. And I was like, I don't know. You know, The Karate Kid was fun and all, but I don't know if I can get into this. And then I watched it, and I got sucked in, and then very upset with the makers of Cobra Kai that they came out with the shows early for the season 3, and now I got to wait a year before I find out what happens after. How dare you make a show I binge watch in one day, and now I got to wait a whole year to find out how it ends. Anywho, small potatoes. I know that the last episode of WandaVision is up, like I said, on Disney Plus. Shockingly, I watched it, which I'll talk about that later, as my wife is home, and I don't want to spoil anything for her. And also, we'll review Young Rock and a couple other things like that. So, that's always fun. you know, I credit my wife. She's doing this thing where she's trying new shows every Sunday, and she watches and trying to find something herself to get into. And she says she found something. I know she was into the WandaVision. That's how she stumbled across that. But hard to say what else she's going to get into if there's something else out there. And, you know, it's funny how women, you know, we're happily married and something. We have very different of opinions on what shows we like and what is not like. Very different, but yes, similar. Like, we both like funny, we both like action, we both like comedy, but not the same stuff. My wife likes The Simpsons, can't stand Family Guy or South Park. By the way, I want to say this because I realized this today. And actually, I have to say that this is something I realized is the case that usually happens. I think it's impossible. If you're a fan of Family Guy, I think it's impossible to have a streaming service and only watch one episode of Family Guy. I don't think that you can possibly watch one episode of Family Guy if you're a fan of Family Guy. Today, I said, you know, I haven't watched Family Guy in a while. I know that there's some things I missed. Let me just watch an episode. Well, that one episode ending the entire last season of Family Guy. So, yeah. I'm hoping I can do that with South Park. South Park is another one of those shows that is hard to watch one episode if you're a family of South Park. South Park and Family Guy is so random that you get sucked in and you just lose track of time. I think that was, I don't know if that's just those shows. It might have to do with maybe the shows you're really passionate about, too. I did that with Breaking Bad, which shockingly, I'm not into drugs. I've never been into drugs. I haven't done any drugs. I don't condone drugs of any kind. Big fan, however, of Bryan Cranston and his work from one of my other favorite shows, Malcolm in the Middle, which I've said is very similar to my family, creepily enough. And again, I know a lot of people from that show anyway, but Breaking Bad, just to see him break out from something like Hal to, you know, Walter White, it's incredible. But you know, it was a show that I didn't think I was going to like that either. I'm like, Breaking Bad? That's about drugs? I don't want to watch this. I was wrong. Shockingly enough, you know that this is a fun, true story. The very first episode of Walking Dead I watched, and I wasn't overly sold the first time, but it wasn't until after. Anyway, sorry, folks. Yeah. I apologize, folks. I got sidetracked for a second. But, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I wasn't always sold the first time I watched the first episode of Walking Dead. I was like, oh, this is kind of different. And, I mean, I like horror stuff, don't get me wrong, but I was like, I'm not going to get into this zombie stuff. And I did. And admittedly, it was one of the shows I watched religiously every single time. And then I started realizing, well, if I get the DVD sets that year, after it's over, I can watch it at my length. And I don't want to worry about commercials. And I think Walking Dead is another one of those shows that honestly I could sit through, and you could easily binge watch Walking Dead if you're into the show and all that stuff. Again, it's, you know, some things, you know, I don't know if you can do that with a lot of shows. Some of them you can, some you can't. But shockingly enough, and I'm going to have to say this, I've given it 3 tries already. I have to say I can't feel, and I don't feel that the Stranger Things phenomenon is going to happen with me. And I've given it 3 chances. On paper, it sounds like something that I would be into. I like supernatural. I've always enjoyed coming of age type things, being someone who, you know, has been adventurous myself and whatever. You would think that you know, Stranger Things would be on paper a very good show that I'd be into. Not the case. And it's not even the cast. The cast is phenomenal. I love everyone on the cast of the Stranger Things. Some of them I've actually worked with in the past. Some of them it was one of their first roles before they did before doing the show. But, you know, and I'm always thankful that. And also the cast people are phenomenal people in general and actors. Again, a lot of people, you know, hate on them or give them a hard time because, you know, different ways of things or they attack them on social media. Unfortunately, being from the wrestling world, I'm very much used to it. I can relate to them. I know what it's like to have crazy fans who have their assumptions and like to attack us, you know, based on what they believe about us. And I think that's sad. I was told that people bullied the poor girl who plays 11, Billy Bob Brown. You know, I think it's sad that you pick on a girl like that until she cries. And the same thing goes, I mean, people were upset because Finn Wolfhard apparently wouldn't stop and sign an autograph or wouldn't take a picture. Well, guess what? Being someone who had him work on a film a long time ago and audition for a film a long time ago, and also just in general, when you have people follow to your house, there's an issue. And you know what? If someone followed my son or daughter home after working all day on a set who I didn't know, they didn't know, just followed into the house or whatever, now, you didn't have to worry about him being nice or what he was going to do. It would be what I would be doing to the person who was chasing my son or daughter down. I don't care how old the person is stalking my son or daughter. If it comes to their safety, I'm going to be all up in arms. So, you know what? Good for Finn Wolfhard and people like him for speaking up and saying, no, I don't have to do that. I'm not going to. I give you plenty of that. And, you know, people have this, you know, They have this overindulgence on themselves that they should feel more important than they are. These people who feel like they deserve more, like fans. Well, because I watch your show, I get to follow to your house and whatever else. Get the hell out of here. Someone follows my son, daughter, or me to my house after I do something with work, there's not an issue with me. There's an issue. You follow me, you're a creeper. There you go. I said it. You know, and this young man, luckily enough and thankful enough, is able to vocalize that, listen, I work, let me do my thing. And a lot of people don't like that he did that or whatever. You know what? Good for him having some boundaries. You need boundaries in life. You need safe boundaries. And, you know, you're not entitled to an autograph or a picture because your favorite person is walking down the street. If you see, me and my wife have a steady belief that when our kids are out and there's people around, you know, when it comes to meeting other people, we're nice to them and, you know, respectful. We don't hound them when they're busy doing something, and there's certain rules we have. And, you know, it's just craziness, you know? Anyway, folks, it's a little early, granted, but the wife just came home, which I'm very excited about. And it's Friday, and she's off all weekend, so maybe we'll have to have her come on the show this weekend and have her do a fun little jazz and wife thing. Anyway, guys, I'm going to let you guys go and enjoy your thing. And in the meantime, may all your dreams come true. Have a good week. Thank you, McNeezy, for coming on and talking about Walter, and wish you guys all the best. And everyone else, may all your dreams come true. Have a great weekend, and let your weekend begin. Peace.